how will President Trump's executive order to end subsidies for health insurance companies affect your coverage here on the First Coast? A closer look just ahead. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast every day on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, Florida Blue and Guidewell CEO Pat Garrity on what we can expect from President Trump's executive order on health insurance. What does it mean for your coverage? Get on the line now with your questions, 549-2937. Then later we'll tell you about a new survey aimed at Jacksonville's LGBT population, plus a special teams meltdown means another home loss for the Jaguars. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, President Trump's decision Thursday to end subsidy payments to health insurance companies is expected to raise premiums for middle-class families and cost the federal government hundreds of billions of dollars, that according to congressional budget estimates. However, the Trump administration says the order is simply a step toward giving consumers more choices in their health insurance and expanding millions of Americans' access to lower cost coverage that better fits their individual needs. Now, Trump's move on health care has millions of Americans this week wondering how will their insurance coverage be affected. Here in Florida, Florida Blue is the state's largest insurer and the biggest participant over the years in the Obamacare or Affordable Care Act exchanges. So we're going to begin the hour with a closer look at what we can expect here in the Sunshine State. Pat Garrity is CEO of Florida Blue and Guidewell, and he's on the line with his thoughts and insights, and he's here to take your calls. Pat Garrity, thanks for being with us. Good morning.
Happy to be here, Melissa. Thank you.
And what are your questions about President Trump's executive order on health care insurance? He wants to end subsidy payments to health care insurance companies like Florida Blue. If you need to know what that means for your coverage, get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in on our Facebook page as well. And so, Pat, the administration says it wants to stop reimbursing insurers like your company for discounts on co-payments and deductibles that they've been required by law to offer to low-income consumers. These are known as CSRs, or cost-sharing reduction payments. What does that mean for your company, Florida Blue?
Well, Melissa, the first thing about this, and I should take this head on, we've heard folks in Washington use the term insurance company bailout. That couldn't be further than from the truth. What happens here is the government sends the subsidy, the payment for deductible and coinsurance for low-income people through the insurer so that we make sure that that's taken care of for those low-income individuals. So it's a completely a pass-through from us to those individuals. And having that cut back certainly creates a problem. October, November, December of this year, we will not be getting reimbursed for this, but we've made a company decision that we will not hold any member in harm's way. So we'll hold them harmless, and they will not have a change for the balance of 2017.
And so all of your consumers will, their coverage will stay the same. They won't see a change. They won't see a premium hike. Is that right?
That's correct. There will be no premium hike for the balance of 2017. There will be no change in their coverage for 2017 either. For 2018, we had a lot of fear and a lot of concern that this type of thing would happen. And so we priced our product for next year with that in mind. You may recall from our last interview that I told you that our rates could have been anywhere from 7 to sort of 12% on a variety of our products for next year. However, without the guarantee from the cost share reduction, that our rates were going to be substantially higher, on the order of 25 to 30% higher, because this major provision of the current Affordable Care Act was being removed by the current administration.
So you're predicting for 2018, let me be clear, rate hikes of 25 to 30%. And if that is going to be the rate for Florida Blue, I would think it's safe to assume other insurers would be in that ballpark as well.
Yeah, let me clarify that. The 25 to 30% is the add-on from the change that President Trump is making. So while the rate increase would have been in the 7 to 12% range, now the rate increase is going to be in that 32 to 38% range. The good news to most of the consumers in the Affordable Care Act is that that will be subsidized under the premium subsidy, which is different than the CSR. Premiums are subsidized for individuals by the federal government. So it's picked up in a different way, but it will be picked up for most of the people covered under the Affordable Care Act.
We'll go to your calls for Florida Blue CEO Pat Garrity in a moment. What are your questions about President Trump's executive order on health insurance? It's 549-2937. And so, Pat Garrity, critics of this move call it a deliberate campaign to force Congress to do away with the Affordable Care Act once and for all. Supporters of the president say this will actually give people more choice in terms of the type of health care coverage they can now have access to. Where do you stand?
Well, to be fair, Melissa, I think there's a third thing that it might be, and a third thing that it might be is something that the president may be using to bring parties to the table in Washington to actually pass new health care legislation. I don't think that this standing on its own is a good thing for the market. It creates instability for this year, 2017. It's patently unfair. You set a set of rules out there that we have been playing under for the last couple of years. The payment system was completely understood by all parties. And now with 3 months left in the year, we're stopping a major payment. To me, that's changing the rules midstream. And I don't think anybody in business would want to be working with somebody who changes the rules midstream. So that part of it is unfair to the marketplace, and it does create instability. If the president's trying to foment legislation going forward, I can certainly understand that that may be part of a strategy, but without that kind of change, this really does create a lot of instability in the marketplace.
Now, according to the Congressional Budget Office estimates, the decision to end these CSR payments, cost-sharing reduction payments, $7 billion a year, that over time it will actually cost the federal government more because the ACA requires premiums don't exceed a set percentage of a person's income. So as premiums set by the insurance companies like yours rise over time, the government boosts tax credits, so the cost to the consumer remains the same, essentially. Is it correct to say, Pat, that this decision will most directly affect middle-income families who are buying their own insurance? Will they be the ones that will see the highest spikes?
This certainly has an impact to people who are paying their premium. This is a very complex marketplace, as you can gather. But my comment earlier about moving this from cost share reduction to premium means that the federal government ends up actually with as big or bigger bill because they're paying the premium subsidy, and that's part of the legislation. And the president cannot make a change to the legislation. He needs an act of Congress to change that. So it really remains to be seen how it all plays out over the next coming days. And even the executive order itself was a charge to the various agencies involved to lay out the rules over the next 60 days. So many of us are sitting here speculating about what those rules will be. And if you realize the timing, by the time they lay out those rules, the open enrollment period will be over.
That's right. It's when does the window on that close, by the way? You were the biggest insurer in Florida for people wanting to enroll at healthcare.gov.
Open enrollment ends December 15, and the rules for this executive order will not be known until after that.
And so it sounds like, in effect, what that does is it forecloses people enrolling for any coverage, or it certainly puts a damper on that.
Yes, it certainly makes for a lot of confusion in the marketplace and the potential that people may make changes during the year or after the year gets started But let's remember, one of the things that's in the executive order is allowing for lower-cost plans, plans that don't have to comply with the essential health benefits of the ACA. One of the complaints we hear often is that the ACA plans have high deductibles and they're difficult for consumers. The lower-cost plans will have even higher deductibles. So I am not sure of the marketplace appeal of a plan that covers as little as it possibly can cover under regulation. So that's a part of what has been announced here, and it's not clear that the marketplace was ready to embrace that.
All right, and if you're just tuning in, as we speak with Florida Blue CEO Pat Garrity, he's CEO of Florida Blue and GuideWell. What are your questions about your health insurance in the wake of President Trump's executive order on health insurance subsidies? Lots of calls at 549-2937. Johnny is in Washington Heights right now. Hey, Johnny, good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning, Melissa. Let me preface my question with this. I have Florida Blue. I am part of the HCA. And my wife, because of Florida Blue and Obamacare, she was able to have surgery and have a 7-pound tumor removed. And because we work in the restaurant industry, most companies pretty much inhibit access to health care for cost reasons. So we pay our premiums every month, and we're very thankful to have the health care that we previously didn't have. It seems Trump cut like 90% of the advertising for the health care. And because I'm a Florida Blue customer, I did get notice of the open enrollment. How do you plan on making open enrollment known to the other people who don't have Florida Blue or who don't have health care at all?
Well, thank you for your question. Let me start by saying I hope your wife is doing well. Thank you for having our coverage, and we're glad that we're able to provide such a meaningful service to you and your family. That's what the Affordable Care Act was about. I will tell you this. We are reaching out every way possible. We're reaching out through social media, through advertising, through churches, through community groups. We have our retail centers. We're letting everyone know the ACA is the law of the land and continues to be the law of the land. What has happened last week is some modifications to the ACA that are intended by the administration. Those are not yet part of the landscape, but we can see them coming. So what I would tell anybody is if you are covered under the ACA, you continue to be covered under the ACA until Congress takes action, which has not happened. You continue to get premium subsidy, so you will be protected under the ACA until there's a change and a law passed that is signed by the president, and that has not happened. So everything remains in place for you and your family.
It'll be interesting, Pat, to see what Congress does in the wake of this order.
It will be interesting. Unfortunately, all things become part of a political process. Those of us who are in healthcare want to make sure that healthcare is the primary focus and that everyone's intention is making sure that we cover as many people with quality health care as possible. But we do understand that some people are playing the game of who's going to win the midterm election and how do you look in the midterm elections vis-a-vis policy. So that is always a backdrop to any decisions that are being made in Washington.
Sure. Pammy on the South Side. Hi, Pam. Go ahead.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Mr. Garrity. My question is around, I know you've been very involved in keeping in touch with what's going on, and have there been any kind of investigation or research into maybe other ways that the government could fund this? Just one, thing I was hearing the other day that you can take your, if you owe taxes through the government, you can choose to maybe sponsor a student with those, owed money. I think they're throwing that around. Has there been any kind of talk about any other way to fund this?
Thank you for your question. Again, there's always discussion around various ways that things can be funded. But right now, We're in a situation where you have a bit of a gray zone in that the cost share reduction was challenged by the House for its validity. A lower court did rule in favor of the House in their legal action against the Obama administration. President Obama brought an appeal of that ruling. And then we had the change of administration. So the Trump administration inherited the appeal of the lawsuit. What essentially is happening now is the president making a decision about whether or not he continues the appeal of that lawsuit. Where it gets very complicated is we've got now 17 attorney generals from states around the nation who asked for standing in this lawsuit. The court has ruled that they have standing. Those 17 attorney generals are right now asking the court to allow them to stop the president from defunding the cost share reduction. That court ruling will be significant, and we all wait to see what action the court will take. In the interim, we're looking for a temporary injunction, which would say until the facts are better known, there would be no change in status. And that could halt the cost share reduction being stopped for at least a period of 90 days or so. So there's a lot of things pending in the court. That's really where the action is right now, to determine whether or not cost share reduction continues in the short run or gets stopped by the action the president has taken.
So President Trump could be checked by the judiciary on this, is what I hear you saying. And just so, as you mentioned, Pat, the House challenged the Obama administration on this. They thought the cost-sharing reduction, the payments were unconstitutional. They didn't like the idea of the government paying out these funds. I'm simplifying it, but that was really the nut of it, wasn't it?
No, that's right. The House said they didn't appropriate funds to pay for this, and the lower court sided with the House on that. There's a complicated set of issues around that. The Obama administration felt like they had standing to make the payments, and in fact, they made them. The Trump administration has been making those payments over the course of the year. So some might argue there's a precedent for making the payments because they were, in fact, made. So there are a number of legal issues here that will be debated and reviewed by the court, and that will have the greatest impact on whether or not this gets funded or the funding stops.
And a lot of people waiting on hold to speak to CEO Pat Garrity of Florida Blue. A few more calls in a moment, but first, here's an email for you, Pat, from David. How has Florida Blue reduced costs for 2018? Have payments to providers, doctors, counselors been reduced? If so, what does this do for patient care if professionals feel they cannot work at this rate?
Yes. So, you know, there's always that give and take that happens in the marketplace. We have a absolute commitment to providing affordable health care to our customers. Some of that is keeping a check on where rates go in the marketplace. Our consumers are not interested in paying whatever new price a particular provider or a particular facility wants to charge. They hold us accountable for trying to keep the ceiling on the cost increases in healthcare. And I think all of us have seen how expensive healthcare is and what that trend looks like. So there's naturally a conflict, if you will, that comes from being in the role of trying to keep the cost under control for the people that consume healthcare across the country.
Adam tweets the show, I'm an 8-year business owner. My wife's a stay-at-home mom. High premiums are making us look at returning to the corporate world. Here's an email for you from Kathy. As a former Florida Blue employee, does Mr. Garrity know how this new loss of funding will affect underwriting guidelines or benefits provided?
It's unclear. We'll be looking at that over the next couple of months. As I said, the president has established an executive order. It came as a surprise. It came as a surprise to everybody, including people in close in Washington. Many of the departments that have been charged with doing their 60-day rulemaking are scrambling today to write those rules. So we'll be in lots of dialogue trying to understand where it's going, but it would be premature for me to fully speculate today what those departments are going to issue as new rules over the next 60 days.
Let's go now to Doug out at NAS Jax. Hey, Doug. Thanks for holding. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Mr. Garrity, I have a question for you. I'm a federal worker, DOD, over here at the base, and we have Blue Cross Blue Shield through the federal system. So how is this going to affect the cost of my insurance as a Blue Cross Blue Shield federal worker?
This will have no impact at all on the federal employee program. What we are all talking about right now is the rulings that the president are directing at the Affordable Care Act and the individual and small group market that is covered by the Affordable Care Act. So this has no impact on the federal employee program. So you can rest assured.
I can breathe. I'm getting ready to retire in March. That's great news. Thank you.
All right.
Happy to bring you some peace of mind.
Yeah. At least one happy caller out there. Okay. Wes in St. Augustine. Hey, Wes. Happy Monday.
Hey, how are y'all doing this morning?
All right. Thanks.
I had a question. My wife and I are small business owners in St. Augustine here, and we had Florida Blue last year. And we went to get a couple of things done, you know, during the year, and I'd already met my deductible for that matter, which I believe was like around five or so. But I was told that it was less expensive to have the procedure done without insurance than with insurance. So I did that, and the next procedure I went for was for my wife, actually. It was an MRI, I believe, and they also said that without insurance, it was less expensive just to pay for it. And I asked them, I told them, well, then I don't have insurance. And they said, we can't do that. That's insurance fraud. I'm just curious. Why should I, you know, pay like $800 a month and a $5,000 deductible if, in fact, I just went and paid for these procedures myself? It's much less expensive. Obviously, you save much more than all the insurance money.
So, fine question. Let me just say to you this. We can't obviously control everybody's billing out in the marketplace, but what I can tell you is, just think about it from a logic standpoint. We cover about 7.5 million people in the state of Florida who are receiving payment from us through a Blue Cross program of some kind. When we negotiate price, we're getting the best possible price in the marketplace across all of the services involved. In fact, we're paying a fraction of what the retail price of a service would be. Will somebody possibly pull out one service and try and discount it to someone who's uninsured? I can't control that. But I can tell you that when you're the largest purchaser of a service, you're getting the best possible price. And if you had gone to a hospital, you would be paying probably five times what we pay to that hospital for that hospital service. So where the bills are significantly large, you're getting a tremendous discount. And any of us don't know at any one given time when the next moment is that you may be faced with that kind of a bill. So I'm very, very comfortable that we're paying a fraction of what anybody would pay uncovered.
All right. And to be clear, if you tuned in a little late, CEO Pat Garrity of Florida Blue says Florida customers will see no change in their rates for 2017. They are anticipating a rate hike for 2018. Pat, thanks for being with us to give us your thoughts on the president's executive order on this. We so appreciate you being with us on short notice.
Happy to be with you, Melissa. Thank you.
All right. And much more still ahead on the program later. Culpepper on the Jaguars' roller coaster season as they have another loss at home. But up next, taking the pulse of the local LGBT population via a new anonymous survey. Back in a moment. We'll be right back.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
Welcome back. Well, it's a growing community in this area, but there's not a lot of good information and data on hand about the LGBT citizens of Northeast Florida. So the LGBT Community Fund for Northeast Florida is looking for adults to participate in a brief and anonymous survey. The data collected will help service organizations and policymakers to better serve the needs of this diverse community. Michael Myers is president of the LGBT Community Fund and joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also in studio, Cindy Watson, executive director of Jasmine, the Jacksonville Area Sexual Minority Youth Network. Good morning.
Good morning.
And on the phone, the keynote speaker at Jasmine's upcoming Coming Out Day breakfast, Dr. Jamma Shelton, a professor at Hunter College in New York and former deputy director of the True Colors Fund. Dr. Shelton, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
Michael, let's begin with you. You are asking for LGBTI adults to take part in a brief anonymous survey for this area. How did this all come about?
Well, a number of us locally, including Cindy, were talking about what data was available on the LGBT community in Northeast Florida. And the LGBT Fund received a grant, and we decided to use that money to do a survey of the community. So we teamed up with the Williams Institute at UCLA School of Law, which is the leading organization doing research on LGBT policy issues, and we put together the survey, which is now underway.
You're asking people questions right now.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the survey will be up. It's for about another month. It's located at neflcommunity.com, Northeast Florida Community, neflcommunity.com, and will be there for until November 14th. So we are active and live today.
And if you're part of this community or you just have comments about this, give us a call at 549-2937. By the way, the I in that acronym, this all stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex.
That's correct.
Can you explain that last one for our listeners?
Well, the terminology is changing, but I guess how I would describe it generally is that people who are gender nonconforming, and there's increasing varieties and names for that today, but intersex, just it refers to people who are gender nonconforming.
Okay. As this survey is going on, Cindy Watson, your organization in this community has done so much work to help young people, and you have a big event coming up, your Coming Out Day breakfast. This is something that having this data, I would think, will help your organization along with others in the community.
Absolutely. You know, this is our 11th annual Coming Out Day breakfast, and we've been calling the corporate and business and civic community together for several years to focus on issues and to really raise the issues of LGBTQ equality in Jacksonville with a focus on young people. So data is critical. We have some data for teenagers, but we don't really have good data for 18 and up. And that's what our partnership with the LGBT Community Fund is supporting. We really want folks to engage in this confidential survey.
And your keynote speaker on the line with us now, she's Dr. Jamma Shelton, professor at Hunter College in NYC and former deputy director of the True Colors Fund. Dr. Shelton, you're an expert in LGBTQ homelessness. Can you give us a quick preview of your keynote talk that you'll be giving here in Jacksonville?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So LGBT young people experience homelessness at disproportionate rates. Nationally, they make up about 40% of the population of youth experiencing homelessness, but only about 7% of the general youth population. And in Jacksonville, it's my understanding that about 60% of youth experiencing homelessness identify as LGBT. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I'm going to talk about some exciting national initiatives that are happening across the country to address the issue and hopefully get people to be inspired and ready to take some action.
And let me ask you this, Michael. You're asking people on this survey about their life experiences, their health, their socioeconomic status, their views of the local community, questions like that.
That's correct.
Given that Jacksonville went through this very public battle over a period of years to update its human rights ordinance and then finally did do so, what would you say to those listening who might say, well, same-sex marriage is now the law of the land. We now have an updated human rights ordinance. Why do we still need to do work on this in this community?
The short answer is that what has to change is attitudes. And really, I would say what our big picture effort is to have Jacksonville be a welcoming community for all, and that includes the LGBT community. And so in the big picture, our work at the LGBT Fund is that. What we strongly believe is that data is key to figuring things out. And so the reason that we're so excited about and focused on the survey is that it will give us data to tell us who we are in this community, and then what our experiences are in the community. And we think that will be valuable for us at the fund as we figure out how to spend the resources we have, but also for businesses and for policymakers to figure out mm-hmm. what they should be thinking about how to fully include the LGBT community.
When you have hard numbers, it makes it a little easier to go before a policymaker, I guess, Cindy Watson, and make your case about things.
Well, for many years, we heard folks say there are no LGBT youth in our schools or in our community agencies or in our community, so we don't need to worry about that. We don't need to really accommodate or make any kind of changes in that regard. And we know that's not true, but sometimes it is true that data helps drive good responses, good community programs, and you know, the kinds of improvements that people need to really not just survive. And many folks are just surviving in Jacksonville and the LGBT community, and young people are at the top of that list, but to also thrive and fully engage in our culture.
And you work with a lot of young people who've been disowned by their families. They've been kicked out. They're homeless.
Yeah, that's one of the drivers that we know, a really powerful driver for youth homelessness, is that kind of family rejection or family misunderstanding and pushing young people out and really not being there for them, which is why Jasmine's role is so important, because we say we're opening the doors for our homeless youth. We want them to come in and know that they're cared for and that they can link to community services and hopefully to reengage with their families at some point.
And Dr. Shelton, as I mentioned, you are the former deputy director of the True Colors Fund. That organization was founded or co-founded by the singer Cyndi Lauper. And it's a reference to her hit song, True Colors, isn't it? About being yourself, letting your true colors shine through. Is that that's the reference, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. The mission is to create a world where all young people can be their true selves. And the True Colors Fund focuses specifically on addressing LGBT youth homelessness through policy, community organizing, and education and training.
Right. And so, you know what? Your breakfast, by the way, your coming out day breakfast was going to be at the Hyatt. Is it still going to be
it
at the Hyatt?
It is at the Hyatt.
I just thought I need to ask, given the hurricane.
Right.
All sorts of events around town have sort of gotten topsy-turvy over the last few weeks.
Right. So the Hyatt is open for banquets and for our breakfast. People have to enter on the second floor through the parking garage. Because the first floor is still under construction, but it absolutely, we were just there. It's beautiful. They're fully functioning on the second level and above, so we're going to have a terrific breakfast. As a matter of fact, Melissa, we're sold out.
Oh, really?
Many of the people listening are probably already have seats and tickets, so we want to make sure folks know about it and get there. We have almost 700 people this year. And we have some great top sponsors, Citi and Deutsche Bank. And, of course, we're always grateful for the Dolores Barweaver Forever Fund for permanently supporting that breakfast.
No need to plug tickets for that, but we do need to circle back and plug this survey, Michael. Let's once again mention how people can be part of this survey, because, as you said, this is happening now, and you want people – it's anonymous.
Right.
You don't have to give your name. But you do want people to participate.
Correct. So in addition to being available at neflcommunity.com, there are paper surveys for those who want to take it by paper that are available at Jasmine and then also at Elder Source. And I guess I would say what our real goal is to try to get the broadest and deepest look at the LGBT community. And one of the things I would emphasize in that especially is that past surveys have underrepresented the African-American community and the elderly. And so we want everybody to take it, but we especially urge either people who are African-American or elderly or people who know LGBT people who fall into those categories to please urge them to take the survey.
And I guess hundreds of people have already participated, but if you haven't, go online to neflcommunity.com. It's a secure website, and this is being hosted through UCLA. You can also pick up a paper copy at Jasmine's offices or at Elder Source, by the way. Fascinating, and thank you so much for joining us. Michael Myers, president of the LGBT Community Fund, Cindy Watson of Jasmine, and on the line, Dr. Jamma Shelton of Hunter College in New York. Thanks for being here, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wildcrest live on stage at the Florida Theater, March 4th at 1 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Watch the Kret brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Why doesn't education use innovation to grow like a successful business? Join WJCT for a screening and discussion about this question and others. Raised in School, Inc., a personal journey with Andrew Coulson. This event will be held on Thursday, October 19th at WJCT Studios, beginning with an opening reception at 5:30 p.m. The event is free, but RSVPs are requested and can be made at wjct.org/events.
Welcome back. Well, it's billed as the largest ever citywide group exercise event. Fitness Fusion takes over Daly's Place this Saturday. It's the first ever public event at the Jaguars' new state-of-the-art indoor practice facility, Flex Field. It's your chance to come on out and see it. And to encourage the entire community to take part in this one-of-a-kind exercise opportunity, the First Coast YMCA is providing free childcare and Jaguars game day youth activities. Dana Troger is Director of Corporate and Community Engagement at First Coast YMCA. Good morning.
Good morning.
So a free exercise event at Flex Field sounds pretty exciting.
It is going to be amazing. We are so excited. We're working with Les Mills, the Jaguar Foundation, and Bold Events. And it's just going to be a three-hour mashup of group exercise classes. So you're going to see everything from yoga, dance, strength training, cardio, martial arts. It's going to be something for everybody.
You can pick and choose whatever exercise you want to do.
You can. There's going to be a lineup, and you can find that on our website or on the event page on Facebook, and it'll give you a little snippet of what each class is, so you can kind of pick your favorites or stay for the whole 3 hours.
And this is the first chance the public will have had to kind of peek at Flex Field.
We are very excited to be the first group. You know, it's free. Like you said, it's free for the community, free childcare, partnering with the Jaguars. I mean, there's literally going to be something for everyone.
How did this all come about, Dana?
So our CEO and president, Eric Mann, was talking with the Jaguars, Mark Lamping, and just this was really just a dream of theirs to bring this event. And you know, the Y wants to inspire people to fall in love with fitness. Mm-hmm. So what better way with an exciting venue to get everyone together?
You want the entire city to be exercising all at the same time.
Yes.
Is that right?
Just imagine it.
How many people can fit into that flex field practice facility?
Gosh, you know, we keep saying 500 to 1,000. I think that's probably a safe number. But along with the kid activities going on from, you know, the 25-yard line down, it's going to be a packed venue for sure.
Speaking of kids, you're sweetening the deal for people. Not only is this free, if you have children, there will be free childcare on site. Kids 5 to 12 can also take part in some JAGS game day youth activities. What can the kiddos get to do?
So the kids, we do encourage all the parents to save their spots. If you'll go through our website and just reserve your child's spot. But the kids 5 to 12, they're going to have the game day experience set up. So there'll be inflatables, there'll be drill exercises and all sorts of things. And then the younger ones will be able to be in our kids zone area and have all sorts of fun planned for them as well.
Now, this is coming up this Saturday from 1 to 4.
That's right.
People can just come on out in their workout gear and get started, sounds like.
Yes, we're encouraging everyone to kind of bring the necessities, bring your towel, water, you know, keys, phone, and just come out and have a great time. It's going to be an exciting afternoon.
It's Fitness Fusion this Saturday. It's billed as the largest ever citywide group exercise event at Flex Field, the Jaguars' new indoor training facility right next to the stadium. Come on down and get fit. Dana Troger, she is Director of Corporate and Community Engagement at the First Coast YMCA. Thanks so much for joining us. Are you going to be working out, by the way?
I am. I was just saying, hopefully it'll be running smooth so we can get out there and enjoy the classes ourselves.
Very nice. And go to firstcoastymca.org for more information about the event and also the types of classes that you can take part in at this fitness mashup. A quick break and then Cole Pepper.
Back in the early 1980s, Democratic Congressman Mike Sinar of Oklahoma had the support of the NRA until he started advocating stricter gun laws.
They not only punish the people that do not follow them down the line, they dehumanize them.
I'm Robert Siegel. How the NRA became a political force to be reckoned with and one lawmaker who paid the price. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News. Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The hidden costs of the emergency room.
They're a secret. You know, you're not going to see these posted on the emergency room door. You're just going to find out what your hospital's facility fee is when you're expected to pay it.
Including the story of the $629 Band-Aid. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC NPRI Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Politicians don't like to talk about this, but tax policy, it's kind of more behavioral than they like to let on.
Whether you're wealthy or middle class or low income, that shouldn't matter in determining whether you're taxed on your donations to charity.
I'm Kai Rizdal. What Washington says about how you spend your money, next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
The Trump administration says the Environmental Protection Agency is too big and does too much.
We should be focused on renewables, but we should also use fossil fuels because the cost effectiveness and the reliability, that's what we should be focused upon.
With more than 15,000 workers and a budget above $8 billion, what exactly does the EPA do? And what is it supposed to do? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, the Jaguars' roller coaster season continues.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
The latest, a 10-point loss to the Rams at home. Cole Pepper's here with the disappointing numbers and stats and highlights and lowlights. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it's been win-loss so far here in the season for the Jaguars. If you step back and take a look at the big picture, hey, this is an improvement from what had happened in the past when it was largely loss. But It has been frustrating that it has been such an uneven set of results for the Jaguars so far this year. The latest, a 27-17 loss to the Los Angeles Rams yesterday. The team has not won a game in Jacksonville this year, played only two. The home game, the third home game they've played, was a win in London, but home in quotes. There was an NFL record set in the game yesterday. Two touchdowns scored in the first 25 seconds of the game. First time that's happened in the Super Bowl era. A kickoff return to open the game by the Rams, and then Leonard Fournette's 75-yard touchdown run on the Jaguars' first offensive snap. Aside from Fournette's running and a few other moments, the Jaguars' offense didn't do much, but it was really the special teams that let the team down. The kickoff return for a touchdown, there was a blocked punt that went for a touchdown, plus a couple of missed field goals. Special teams either cost the Jaguars or missed the opportunity for 23 points in the game, and that's awfully tough to overcome when you don't have an offense that's clicking on all cylinders. It was also the smallest attendance for a Jaguars game since Shad Khan bought the team. They announced 56,000 tickets distributed, which is the metric that the NFL uses. That's tickets sold and out on giveaways and sponsorship and so forth. It looked like there were maybe around 50,000 in the stadium yesterday. How much of that is about boycotting from the take-a-knee protests? Certainly some of that is the case. There was a plane that flew overhead trailing a banner that said, "Be American, boycott the Jags in the NFL." I think there's also a component to this that the Jaguars have not been good at home, and people may be staying away a little bit when you consider that the Gators had a home game yesterday, the previous day on Saturday. That impacts things as well, but it was not a good look.
So you think then that the controversy has dampened ticket sales somewhat. At the same time, the other day, Shad Khan gave a talk at a conference in Chicago, and he called the president the Great Divider. You know, he said, people are confused on the First Amendment versus patriotism, that if you exercise your First Amendment, you're not a patriot, and that's crazy. So Khan really kind of doubling down on his initial stance at Wembley Stadium in London when he linked arms with his players. He's really standing by his initial position on this,
like. And it's interesting, again, to me, how much of the protest is about people feeling offended that players knelt during the national anthem and did it on foreign soil, which is another component of this for the Jaguars, not for most other teams. Or if it's Trump supporters who don't like the fact that Shad Khan now is being vocal in his opposition to what the president is saying and doing. Again, remember, this is a man who gave $1 million to the Trump campaign leading up to the election. So this is a story that's going to continue. This is one snapshot of the reaction to this. TV ratings were about what they usually are for a Jaguars game, which made it the number one watched event in the city yesterday. So it doesn't appear that the TV numbers are taking a hit, but perhaps some of the attendance at the gate is taking a hit. We'll see. The Jaguars next go on the road to take on the Indianapolis Colts, trying to maybe keep the roller coaster going at this point, because that would mean a win next time out.
All right. And as you said, better attendance for Florida, but they did lose at home.
They did, losing for the second straight week at home, 19-17 to Texas A&M. There is heat already beginning to build on Jim McElwain as the Gators have struggled. I mean, this really started early before the season when the Gators had a handful of players get in trouble with a debit card scam system. And so they've had nine players who have been held out of games this year because of that. And it's really kind of gone downhill from there for Florida. There is heat on Jim McElwain, the head coach. We'll see if that results in anything else going forward. Meanwhile, it's also there's some building unrest in Tallahassee, despite the fact that Florida State picked up their second win of the season, 17-10 over Duke. But when Florida State only beats Duke by a touchdown, that's not well received in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
So it's not been a good season for the Gators or the Seminoles. The Bulldogs, on the other hand, enjoying a very good season. They're now ranked third in the AP Top 25 after beating Missouri. A little bit of a slow start, but they pulled away late. The Bulldogs, like the Gators, have an off week before the Florida-Georgia game in Jacksonville 2 weeks from Saturday.
I cannot believe it is that time of year again already.
Yeah, it will be here before you know it.
Before we know it.
Yeah, both teams have the bye week to prepare for the big game.
All right. And let's talk about the Armada and also our newest team, the Icemen.
Yeah, the Armada have three games remaining. They hold their fate in their hands at this point. They play Wednesday and Sunday at home, and then they'll wrap up the season on the road at San Francisco. If the Armada win out, they're in the postseason. If not, they would need some help. The big Wednesday's an important game because they need to win against Edmonton in order to be able to be set up for what they would do against the New York Cosmos. Cosmos, the team they're competing with for the final playoff spot, and a win by the Armada over the Cosmos will go a long way to helping that. Meanwhile, the Jacksonville Icemen hockey team debuted in front of a full house at the arena. I say full house, the entire lower bowl was full, and that's what they will sell in terms of their tickets there. Over 8,000 were in attendance for the first game, an overtime loss. But the reports from folks who were in the stands, they enjoyed the social activity, a couple of fights, and
hey, it's hockey. You got to mix it up a little bit.
There is that, and also, again, as we talked about last week, going to be very interesting to see what kind of momentum they can carry forward with regards to attendance and interest. Their big fight. There's two of them for the Icemen. Number one, it's hockey in the South, which has been a hit and miss proposition. Some places it's done very well, others not as well. And number two, they've got to play half of their season during football season. And that's tough to compete sometimes for attention and also for dollars.
Yeah, but something new, and if you're a sports fan and you want to check it out, the Icemen are at the arena now, and he's Cole Pepper. Follow him on Twitter and also download the Sam and Cole podcast for all your sports news and notes. See you next week.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. Next on 1A, the EPA under President Trump. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. This show rebroadcast tonight at 8 p.m., and we'll be back again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. See you then, and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.